I'm going to introduce you now to offer you a pretty rare insight into the citizens' attitudes of one of our neighbours. We think we're squeezed in between big forces like the US and China in this new world order. Well, coming up from the Crawford Forum, an insight into the political and cultural challenges facing the country sitting just off North Korea, protected by the United States, and with quite a burden of history when it comes to China. The dilemmas of Japan. One of the very interesting discussions that has emerged is the position of Japan, which is, we've already covered partly on the program in the wake of the big Korea summit. But one of the guests is Professor Keiichi Fujiwara, who's Professor of Graduate Schools for Law and Politics at the University of Tokyo and Professor of International Politics there, and he teaches courses on international relations. He was a Fulbright student at Yale University before he returned to Japan. He's a regular commentator on international affairs and Japanese foreign policy on Japanese television networks along with the BBC World Service and so on. And he proved to have some extremely interesting insights. In fact, you revealed, I thought, that there's a huge dilemma underway in Japan right now. The summit almost brought it to a surface, but it's to do with trying to tap the, both you say, a pacifist and isolationist tendencies within your population, and yet this sense that, well, if I read you correctly, you're being squeezed potentially between these big powers and changes that you couldn't really have foreseen.
That, unfortunately, is a very accurate description, I dare say. You have China on the one hand, you have the United States on the other hand, and Japan is not in a position to influence the behavior of either governments.
And yet you're right there beside, you're right in the middle of this vexed area called North Asia.
Well, we're caught in the middle, and that's not a very nice position to be in. And then compare Japan to South Korea. South Korea was the key advocate for improving relationship with North Korea. South Korea is not exactly a gigantic military power, but nonetheless, they did somehow work on diplomatic maneuvering to improve North-South relations. I have my own reservations about the consequence of the summit meeting between North Korea and the United States. But having said that, I must say...
What do you mean? Just say a little bit more about that, please.
The summit between North Korea and the United States came out without any tangible commitments from North Korea to dismantle the nuclear arsenal. Now, there was always a difference of priority. For South Korea, this was improving the relationship between the North and the South. It has been a divided country, so this is certainly understandable. But at the same time, dismantling the nuclear arsenal was never a top priority for South Korea. The meeting of two leaders, North and South, was a historical moment. And in fact, that was what they wanted. From the Japanese viewpoint, I dare say, and that nuclear capability of North Korea itself is a huge threat for Japan, accompanied with missile capabilities. So dismantling the nuclear arsenal was the top priority, along with returning of the abductees from North Korea. From this perspective, the summit came out with very little consequences. We'll have to wait until the real developments takes place. And the commitment toward denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula is not enough.
So is there any appetite that you can discern inside Japan for developing an independent strike capacity, an independent defence policy, where you basically take more charge over your own fate, given that you're in this very dangerous, theoretically dangerous area?
At the moment, in the Japanese government, I dare say that the views supporting a more autonomous strike capability is a minority.
It's
a minority view, because working together with the United States is the top priority. But with the Trump administration, the United States might actually support Japan's developing first-strike capability. And if this agrees with U.S.-Japan relations, then there's no reason whatsoever for the Japanese government to disagree. You see, the trouble here is that when the American government, or President Trump to be more precise, redefining commitments to the alliance, this does lead Japan to seek more autonomous possibly autonomous roles. It's not happening yet, but we can drift into that direction.
Well, therefore, the obvious question is, tell me how you judge Japan-China relations at the moment then, because that's just got so much history attached to it.
Oh, yes. The paradox here is that the Abe administration is somehow improving ties with Beijing. When it comes to trade relations, there is much more discussion. The summit talks, Xi Jinping and Abe, these are the two leaders who refuse to meet. But there has been summit meetings on a regular basis. It is even more weird, would be the word, to see both the leader of PRC and the Japanese Prime Minister talking about a rule-based order. The world is directed against the United States at this moment. So in many ways, both China and Japan are hedging the risk of the Trump-led world. Whether this can continue in the future is an open question, because trade relations with PRC, China, and Japan would become much more thorny in the future, along with military competition in South China Sea. But right now we see a more cordial relationship.
Cordial,
yes.
But you did say in that session, quite emotionally, about what you would like to see Prime Minister do in terms of recognising Japan's, the burden that Japan carries in terms of its responsibility for the past.
Oh, most certainly, yes. I would argue that Japan should face the atrocities committed by the Japanese government and the Japanese troops in China, and the atrocities committed under the Japanese colonial regime in the Korean Peninsula. Mr. Abe has learned not to visit the Yasukuni again.
The shrine with the old soldiers with the...
Yes. So, in some ways, Mr. Abe has somehow tried not to provoke the historical memories of Japanese atrocities. But if Japan could come forward with a straightforward message that we want to listen to the experiences that during the wartime years or colonialism, this would show a new identity for Japan, and that would be at the basis of a constructive role. And I must say that Mr. Xi Jinping, with Mr. Xi Jinping, Chinese, whatever democratic elements that may have been allowed, has been under grave challenge. So watching the two leaders, Mr. Abe and Mr. Xi, working together is better than observing a confrontational relationship, but that certainly does not have a much more constructive future.
I mean, you would like to see in this new world, say, someone like Mr. Abe or a Japanese Prime Minister go to Nanjing.
Yes.
Because, I mean, Japan has apologised, hasn't it? But you say that's clearly not enough.
Mm-hmm. Japan has apologized, and the Japanese government keep on arguing that we have apologized before. How many times do we have to repeat our apologies? Now, you can apologize without knowing what you did. Apology is one step, but even more important is to know what happened. There is a certain hypocrisy in making apologies while trying to ignore or even suppress expression of the experiences during the wartime years. And if you see an indifference toward wartime atrocities, then you would question what the apologies really mean. Yes. So I would say that knowing should come before apologies.
Prime Minister Abe was one of the ones who went over and played golf at Mar-a-Lago, et cetera, et cetera, with President Trump. It doesn't seem to have yielded him much, does it?
Yeah, no, it was quite painful to watch our Prime Minister visiting Mar-a-Lago and playing golf, cozying up with the U.S. President and trying to expect that the U.S. President would somehow be working for a more friendly policy toward Japan. It didn't really happen, did it? First day in office, Mr. Trump pulled out from TPP talks, and then this year has imposed steel and an aluminium tariff to Japan as well, and not only to the European Union or Canada or China, but also to Japan. And Mr. Trump seems to be working in a different world where the Japanese economy was so strong that we could take away employment from the United States. This is about the 1980s. We're now in 2018. So, no, Mr. Abe's policy of embracing Trump has brought very little for the Japanese public.
So, look, what is your mood looking on at this? Just really nothing is settled. Nothing. That's what I'm taking out of this policy forum. What's the mood of Japan? Would you judge it to be?
The mood of Japan is frustration that nothing is really moving. I should add that there are no major contenders to the office of the Prime Minister. Abe is very strong. Not exactly strong. The contenders are so weak. And after all, we do have political and economic stability with the Prime Minister. So you may dislike Ms. Abe, but you may be stuck with that leader. And when Mr. Abe looks much better than the President of the United States, then you can see how bad things are.
As you said, and look, very quickly, attitudes towards Australia. I mean, Australia's there somewhere in the region, not quite sure exactly where it fits. What's your judgment?
Well, Australia is tremendously important, really, especially in the coming years with the United States' U.S. commitment toward the international regimes become more weak. Australia would be one nation that is committed to international institutions that Japan is going to work together with. Now, Australia is also one of the most popular tourist destinations in Japan. If you want to go out for a honeymoon, if you have money, it would be Australia. So it's not only kangaroos, really. So Australia would be important. That should lead to a more vibrant relationship, right? I mean, it shouldn't be simply because we can't untrust the United States anymore so much. We should bring something more positive in a bilateral relationship. Right now, our ties with Australia geopolitically was based on ties with the United States, and whether we can work out something more positive in that direction.
And, of course, thousands and thousands of young Australians now go regularly to Japan to ski.
Yes, and Australians are welcome guests in many ways. Australian people in Japan are not only well-educated and polite, they're also curious and extremely friendly. So they make great friends.
And that's Keiichi Fujiwara from the University of Tokyo. And it was a very nice endorsement of Australia, I thought, from him.